TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
This is my spot.
All the time. A division of Bell Media. McPhillips Toyota, Manitoba's hardest working Toyota dealer, presents the TSN 1290 NHL Free Agency Special. With Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Live from the Winnipeg Free Press News Cafe on TSN 1290.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Free Agent Special, live on location at the Winnipeg Free Press News Cafe. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, and a large crowd of people who have begun to gather here at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Come on down, have some Canada Day breakfast with us, and settle in for what should be an entertaining morning and afternoon of people spending way too much money on mediocre free agents.
Yeah.
I think that if you want to boil down free agency into a nutshell, that's pretty much what it is right there.
Absolutely. There's going to be a few moves, but they're not going to come in for a few hours. But you're going to have to be a little bit patient. We're expecting the Winnipeg Jets to mainly re-sign guys that they were under contract last year.
Well, I mean, before we can talk about the Jets a bit later, but think about the Jets now, and guys like Tanner Glass, they've trickled into free agency now, yep. Really, unless they sign in the next 2 hours. They're in the UFA market, and you have to assume that it's a fair game.
That's right, and we're going to be joined by Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press coming up in about an hour's time. We're going to spend about half an hour talking about the Jets specifically, their current unsigned free agents who are in about 2 hours' time become free for everybody in the NHL, as well as who they might be targeting on the free agency market. The way it works is the Jets are $11 million below the salary cap floor.
Yep.
So you know they're going to have to spend some money. Some of that is going to go to Evander Kane, because they have to re-sign him as an RFA. Mm-hmm. But other than that, they are going to have to, league-mandated, spend some money. And that'll be interesting to see where they dole it out. Before we get into that, of course, one guy who I thought the Jets might have had some interest in re-signed late last night with his previous team. That's Paul Gostad of the Nashville Predators. Paul Gostad re-signed in Nashville last night, 4 years, at $3.25 million per year, $13 million total over the length of the contract. Let's start with that contract before we get into Justin Schultz and that whole debacle from yesterday afternoon.
Well, you know, Drew Gostad is a guy who has never scored more than 12 goals in a season. Paul Gostad's a guy I like. He's a bigger guy. He can play physical, but he's not the mean player, so to speak. He is a face-off guy. He can, play in all situations, and more so, not all situations, more so even strength and penalty kill. 3.25 isn't a low ticket for him, though. And I think part of the paying Paul Gostad at 3.25 is what he would have got in the open market, and part of it's the fact that Nashville gave a first-round pick for him. And as you saw with Johnny Oduya, it looks a lot better when you sign the player, the pending UFA that you traded for, and you traded, a fair amount of compensation for under the circumstances. So Gostad, what he does, and we spoke about it off-air, you mentioned this, Drew, he's a Nashville player. He's responsible defensively, can do the little things, and he can't score. And he's making $3.25 a year now for 4 years, and that is fourth highest paid forward, on Nashville. So Martin Irat, David Leguan, Mike Fisher, Paul Gostad. And you have those four players making up a considerable amount of money, so about nine and about, eight. So $17 million for Martin Irat, David Leguan, Mike Fisher, Paul Gostad. You have no guarantee that any of those players scores 20 goals next year. No guarantee.
No.
So that's the risk you have with Nashville. It always seems to be paying guys to do little things, and generally little things aren't paying guys to score. So will it be an awful contract? I don't think that's great value by any means. I think it's a little bit of an overpay, but I thought that's what he would have got in the market anyways, and we're dealing with overpays because we're in free agent day.
It's amazing what happens, in free agency day. We've seen it, we talked about a lot yesterday during our preview show, the contracts that are being handed out. Dennis Wiedemann, 5 years, $25 million.
Yep.
I mean, or 26 and a quarter, to be perfectly accurate. I mean, these are numbers that are ridiculous. I mean, there's no other way of saying it. None of these players are really worth their value. I mean, Paul Gostad's a nice player. But if you can't score 20 goals in the NHL, you shouldn't make $3.5 million a year.
And we're going to continue to see that today. If you look at some of the defensemen that are available on the free agent market right now, whether it's a Matt Carl or a Jason Garrison. They're asking for in the $5 million range. And if you think about it, Drew, if a guy like Dennis Weidman is commanding $5 million on a five-year deal, then those contracts make perfect sense. I mean, a guy like Matt Carl is, he's more of an offensive defenseman as well, but he is a more well-rounded defenseman, and he's going to command $6 million. Jason Garrison, we've heard, is asking for $5 million from the Vancouver Canucks, and they're interested.
Yeah.
Based on one season, that's a pretty high cost. But when you know that guys like Ryan Suter and Zach Parise have only a few teams that are on their list of possible destinations, it's really a player's market, if you want to call it that. The players are loving it right now. A guy like Jason Garrison has four or five teams that want him.
He's had one good NHL season.
Yeah, he had one good year.
And he's defensively limited. Yes. And we'll talk more about Jason Garrison when we break down the defensive class. But it just goes to show you this is silly season. Right,
well, Paul Gross said last year, 7 goals, 14 assists in 70 games. So.
I know he certainly fills a role. I mean, the only thing that I can see of being positive about that is when you're signing a guy, you want him to have at least one sort of A or A plus talent. And he's got he's good in the faceoff circle. So, you can point to him and say, that is a skill that he is bringing to our team. You look at a guy like Dennis Weidman, he doesn't necessarily have a skill that you can point to and say, he is bringing that to our team.
I don't know. I mean, Drew, I think he does a lot of things okay, bit average or above average, more than Gostad does. So in the sense that Weidman can play power play and PK and even strength. Is he great? No. But at least he can do that. And he's a defenseman, and there's less of those available and less of those play, and they play a lot more minutes. But at the same time, I mean, I guess Nashville's looking at a big middle with Leguan, Fisher, and Gostad. Leguan, the speed, Fisher skates, he's big and strong, and Gostad can, be that third-line guy. So they think they're strong up the middle. The problem is none of those guys can score consistently. So we'll see. I mean, again, they're going to take that approach to building their team. They haven't changed it all over the years, and losing Ryan Suter will be a huge shock to their system. And if they don't, then they'll be fourth or fifth seed, and they'll go into the playoffs, and
they won't try again.
Yeah, exactly.
And they'll try and do it. We've seen them do it, to some success the last couple of years, is that they'll be able to, they'll win one round and then they'll lose and, they won't have enough horses in order to score the goals in the second or third rounds that you need to. Mm-hmm. And, that seems to be their MO, and we'll see what happens with Ryan Suter. He is the big ticket. The other big ticket is Zach Parise. And Zach Parise, it's been reported earlier today, or earlier this morning, as everybody gears up to 11 o'clock Winnipeg time, is that Zach Parise wants $12 million in a signing bonus right off the top. That is the starting point for Zach Parise, is a $12 million signing bonus.
And as there's word out this morning that both the Los Angeles Kings and Ottawa Senators are hot on the heels of Zach Parise.
Yeah, and I imagine a few other teams, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Zach Parise is in a very good position right now. Los Angeles has kind of emerged lately. A year ago, the Minnesota Wild were obviously the front runner based on the fact that Zach Parise has the family ties there in Minnesota. But now it looks like Zach Parise isn't as interested in going to Minnesota. Detroit is obviously on that list. They would love to get Zach Parise. You could probably put maybe half a dozen teams to 10 teams that are, let's say, seriously interested, but really you have to think that Parise and his agent are really only serious about maybe three or four of those teams.
Let's talk more about Parise coming up in a little bit. Justin Schultz was the other big signing yesterday. Justin Schultz really played a game of The Bachelor last night with a number of NHL teams in which he got his suitors all together, and they all presented him with their best offer and why he should be he should win a date with Justin Schultz on whatever team. And then he whittled it away, and he eventually chose the Edmonton Oilers. Now, we knew going into that negotiation that the contract was going to be set out. It wasn't a highest bidder situation. It was a situation where Schultz could pick where he wanted to play, where he thought he might get the most ice time, where he thought he might get the most opportunity. He chose the Edmonton Oilers. Let's start with his choice first, the Edmonton Oilers. We know the Oilers were there, the Red Wings were there, the Senators were there, the Flames were there. A lot of the Western Canadian teams were there. He had dropped out sort of some of the Eastern teams really early in the process. What do you think of his choice of the Edmonton Oilers to start with?
Well, it's a good choice in terms of fit, Drew. They need defensemen. They have a lot of young offensive talent. They can use a guy to quarterback the power play, especially after getting rid of a guy like Tom Gilbert, who didn't do a great job of that, but did it better than the guys they have now. Cam Barker couldn't crack it there. He's gone. So he fits the need. He fits the offensive need. He fits the need on defense, period, there. And he's playing with a lot of young offensive talents, and he's going to fit in, kind of be the 80s Oilers again. So I think it's a good fit. Just the way he went about it, I thought, was the wrong way.
Well, let's talk about that then. Let's talk about the way he went about it, you know, selling his services, you know, having all these teams sit down. It's same as the free agency. You know, if you a free agent wouldn't get criticized the same way, I don't think. You know, Zach Parise is not going to get criticized the same way for the way he's going about it. But yet something about this was more unseemly. You know, why do you think that there is that feeling of, is it because he sort of he bailed out on the team that drafted him for no very good reason?
But teams and players have done that before. I mean, we have Blake Wheeler in Winnipeg partially because he bailed on Phoenix like that.
Right.
Jason Gregoire, who the Jets signed last offseason, how did they get him?
He bailed out on the Islanders.
So, Richie, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how a guy who at this point only has NHL upside got a two-year deal where he's getting $3.7 million a year.
Well,
that's the max he could.
The max he could get is 2 years, Ezzy, because he's over the age that you can sign a three-year entry-level deal, and that's bonuses included. So
yeah. If he doesn't reach those bonuses, he doesn't necessarily get up to that point.
Right.
So what is the base salary?
I think it's 9.25.
It's 9, yeah.
Okay.
It's expected that he's going to, I mean, most, you know, based on this, the way this whole thing went, they would expect that he's going to get up to that, those bonuses.
Yeah, you know, yes and no. You have to really be good to get up to all your bonuses. You know, and obviously an injury, Drew would throw that off. But,
sure.
For the Edmonton Oilers, it's a great signing. I'm not sure, you know, who had as much to do with the signing. Was it Paul Coffey? Was it Wayne Gretzky?
Well, they make this guy sound like he's the second coming. You know, they had Wayne Gretzky give, you know, pay him a phone call. I mean,
yeah.
it just seemed a little, you know, you're a 21-year-old rookie who's never played a game in the NHL, and yeah, you had a nice career at Wisconsin where you played college hockey, but there's a ton of players who've had nice careers in college who've never materialized into anything, and everybody's wooing him like he's the you know, the next great Norris Trophy winner.
And it wasn't a surprise that he was going to Edmonton. I mean, you know, we've had David Staples on before. He was reporting that 3 months ago that they were interested, and I really think that it was always his number one choice, Edmonton. But I'd have to agree. I mean, if there's one team that you want to go to, he's a young player, and he's not going to be, you know, an impact player for a couple of years. Very few guys come in and do that.
They're counting on him to be an impact player right off the start.
That's what they're hoping. I mean, his base salary, Drew, you're right, is $9.25. Performance bonuses are $2.85, and his signing bonus is $92.5.
And keep in mind, even if he doesn't reach those performance bonuses, the cap hit is the same.
Yeah.
You know, if they're in your contract, you have to account for it in the salary cap. So a salary cap hit, regardless of if they actually pay it out or not, is $3.775 million.
It's not a problem for Edmonton.
No, they have nothing, but they have cap space, so that's not the issue. But this is a guy who's, I mean, the Oilers are counting on him to really be, you know, be with the missing link on their back end in terms of the young players. We know that they have a ton of upfront talent, but it's their back end where they were struggling and don't have any real tremendously quality in terms of NHL players.
We talk about guys like Mark Scheifele. You know, this guy's going to be 22 next week. So he's coming into the league at 22, not coming to the league at 18.
Right.
So
he's already done the seasoning that usually you do in terms of in the minors and in college and everything else. So the Oilers are expecting him to step right into the lineup. If he has to go down, well, first of all, I guess it's an entry-level deal, so he can go down to the AHL. But the Oilers would definitely be disappointed after all this brouhaha if he goes down to the AHL. Never mind that. There will be a lot of people with Schadenfreude saying, you know, told you so. Why are we all hyping this guy up to no end? And he can't actually stick it in the NHL.
I mean, by all accounts, he's going to be that good. But the question is, how good?
He'd better have his head on a swivel. Because based on the comments and the way he's gone about this, he's going to have a target on his back. The Anaheim Ducks, I mean, I think it's to his benefit that Randy Carlyle's not the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks anymore. If Randy Carlyle was the head coach and Justin Schultz played this on Carlyle, Carlyle himself would stick him during the game, I think.
But, I mean, you look at their defense now. You have Whitney and Schultz, two offensive guys, and then Nick Schultz and Ladislav Smith, two defensive guys. So they're going to probably want to get...
You know, Jeff Schultz, so they can have three Schultzes.
Yeah, well, yeah. that does get them a nice core in terms of... combinations, right? If you, in theory, want to play defense and offense, defense and offense, that does help you out. And if you want to, you probably add one more defender in there, unless you think guys like Corey Potter, Jeff Petrie can play up to certain roles. Probably want to add one more guy in there, and then you probably want to look at playoffs.
Well, based on the offensive talent, even alone, they have those expectations.
Yeah.
They're done. Steve Tambolini would say they never, you know, intended to tank to begin with, because
Well, I don't think they did, but they tanked anyways.
They're done. They expect now. Expectations are very high with the Edmonton Oilers going forward from this season on.
See, and that's where I think that, you know, Edmonton Oilers fans should be cautious about that, because a signing like Justin Schultz is good for the long term, but the Edmonton Oilers are still one of the bottom teams, and they're still so young, and we just went over their defense. I mean, you're still years away from being a contending team, and you know, on defense there, they could definitely use a veteran or two, another puck moving defenseman, and you know, you've still got question marks on your third and fourth line. So I realize that maybe, you know, Oilers fans are getting excited with another first overall pick and the Justin Schultz signing, but you're still a few years away from taking that next step. It's not going to happen this year. It might happen 3 years from now. It's probably not going to happen this year.
I think they got to be closer to that.
I think they have to be closer than 3 years.
They got to be after this season. They have to be in
a playoff team.
Yeah,
they have to be a playoff team.
If you look at some other rumors, you want to talk about that now or after?
No, let's go to break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more rumors, and we'll talk some of the free agent goaltenders who are on the market. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Free Agent Special, live on location at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Free Agency Frenzy. I was going to say preview, but that was
yesterday.
Did
you get caught off guard there by the breakfast being served?
I did get a little caught. It looked a little attractive. You know how I get distracted by bacon when I see bacon sizzling. And, you know, you're lucky I'm still able to form a sentence at this point in time. Anyways, welcome back to the program. If you want to join us, we're down at the Winnipeg Free Press News Cafe. Beautiful day, beautiful breakfast available. My father is looking at me, and Richard's mom is looking at him. So, you know, it's good times for everybody here. Let's get caught up on some of the rumors that are going on around the NHL. It is, as we said, silly season. Everybody's waiting another about hour and 40 minutes until the free agency window opens. We'll start in Philadelphia Flyers. They have a hole on defense, and that hole could get bigger if they lose Matt Carl. So apparently the Philadelphia Flyers are doing everything in their power, pulling out all stops, is the quote-unquote, in order to re-sign Matt Carl to anchor the or to be a mainstay on the Flyers' back end, especially because I don't see it possible that Chris Pronger is going to come back and play hockey.
I don't think so either, Drew. So I think when you have his Pronger on the outs, and then your defense is Kimmo Timonen and Braden Coburn, Mezeros, Luke Shen, Grossman. So you actually have a pretty good core there. But Carl does add an offensive element. He's the best offensive player. Him and Timonen are the best offensive players of the players we mentioned. And losing him would hurt their mobility on the back end too, because Shen is not the best skater, and neither is Grossman. So what you have there then is Coburn as your most mobile defenseman, him and Mezeros. But you need to get Carl under contract. You need to be able to help your transition game, and you need to have your speed at a certain level to be able to deal with guys like Crosby and many of the other top players, you know, Gabrick and guys like that. Not that he's the best defensive player, but his transition game is great.
Yeah,
he can play in the power play, and his speed is an important element of his game.
And we certainly know that the goaltending in Philadelphia isn't going to bail out their defense.
True, also.
If anything was taught from last year, Ilya Bryzgalov. So Matt Carl is coming off of a four-year, $13.75 million contract. What do you think it takes to get him signed? Especially what you've been seeing with, you know, Dennis Wydman. Mm-hmm. I mean, that Dennis Wydman contract.
Carl's probably looking in the $6 million range. I think the Philadelphia Flyers would hate to lose Matt Carl to another team, and I think that there's probably again many teams that are interested in him. And I mean, the Philadelphia Flyers again would love to replace a guy like Chris Pronger with Ryan Suter, but you know, all signs are pointing to the Detroit Red Wings. But you have to think a guy like Carl, especially knowing when the Philadelphia Flyers are in a position where they want to re-sign a free agent like Matt Carl, you have to think that his value is only going up, knowing that the team he was just playing on wants him and knows other teams are interested.
The problem with Carl is that you sign Coburn to 4.5 a year for the next 4 years you have him signed for. He's better than Carl all around.
Right.
So you're going to pay him more than Coburn?
I never really understood that logic. I mean, it's Braden Coburn's bad luck that the defensive market wasn't as valued
maybe,
as it is today.
You don't know how the Eagles work in the room and such. But right now,
and Coburn's coming off one of his best years ever.
So if you're talking what he would get, you know, what Philly would pay him as opposed to what he'd get on the market, I think if he goes to the market, I think you're probably looking at a five-year deal at about $26.25 million.
So he's going to match the Wydman deal, you think?
$5.25 a year, about.
Well, that's the Wydman deal.
Yeah, especially because he's younger than Wydman. He's 27 years old.
Well, he's a better player than Dennis Wydman.
Yeah. He is. They have some similarities in their game, in a sense, in terms of maybe their defensive
Shortcomings?
Shortcomings. Some would say Carl's more net. I mean, Weidman can play offensively. They're both good skaters. Both move the puck. I mean, one's a lefty, one's a righty. But yeah, they're certainly both have some flaws in their game. But on the market, I mean, Toronto wants to get more mobile. What if Toronto makes a big offer for him?
Well, we'll see what happens there. Moving to Ottawa, the Ottawa Senators are said to be a big player in free agency coming up. We heard that they've been involved in the Rick Nash discussions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though Rick Nash doesn't have Ottawa as one of the approved teams that he would be willing to be traded to, but Ottawa wants to make a splash amongst other players. We've heard that they might be in on Zach Parise now.
That's a rumor this morning, is that they're going to make a huge offer for Zach Parise with the expectation that he won't accept it, but they're going to make it anyways. And why not? They're going to try and pitch that he can play with Jason Spezza. And the Ottawa team moving forward looks pretty darn good. I don't see it happening, but it doesn't hurt to try.
It also doesn't hurt to be known out there as potentially a player in the market.
That's
a
good point.
There's something to be said for the value of just having the optics of
we
have money, we want to spend money, we want to improve our team, and we're willing to do it through the draft and through free agency and through any number of different avenues.
That's absolutely true.
The San Jose Sharks are looking to, they have a window of opportunity in which to trade Dan Boyle. If they traded Dan Boyle, I don't see how that improves their team at all.
You have to wonder, Ezzy, why they would trade Dan Boyle. And, I mean, you look at San Jose's back end. San Jose's back end has been the problem for them, to me, forever. And they've improved it, obviously, with the acquisition of Burns. And I guess what they think at this point is Dan Boyle and Brent Burns are a little bit redundant because Burns can be the top power play guy. They're both those right-handed shooting guys. They're both puck-moving guys. And they're both, you know, when you have that, I guess that redundancy in talent, you want to turn it into something else. Now, they should have known that when they acquired Burns, and I'm not sure if this was part of the big plan, but you bring in Brad Stewart now, so you have a nice guy who can play your third defense role. You have Vlasic, you have Doug Murray, so a speedy guy, more of a stay-at-home guy. Jason Demers is an offensive guy. The Boyle thing, you wonder why that doesn't fit in. I mean, Boyle and Burns as your top two guys on the top two right-handed right-side defensemen, Ezzy, and then you got guys like Murray and Stewart and Vlasic on the left side. I don't have any issue with that. So what are they getting back? Are they getting younger up front? Well, that's a need, but they still need to get a defenseman back if they trade him. So they're going to get a good young forward and a good young defenseman for Dan Boyle at his age?
I wouldn't think so.
No.
I mean, Dan Boyle is definitely on the downside of his career. Still a useful and effective NHL player, but
now,
not what he once was.
One of the reasons we're hearing this right now is because Dan Boyle's had a no-trade clause for a while. And
that's right. There's a window of opportunity
exactly.
in which they're allowed to trade him, and then there's no trade clause.
A limited no-trade clause comes back in.
Right.
So it's a little bit less restrictive than it was before. But they have a chance now to push them wherever they want.
Exactly. New York Islanders, Matt Karkner is linked to their name. I mean, the Isles need, they need NHL players. I mean, they have.
Well, I don't know why they want to sign Matt Karkner then.
Well, does he fill a role for them?
Well, they've now got Lubomir Vishnovsky and Mark Strait. Obviously, they're both puck-moving defensemen. So they're trying to solidify and get a third-pairing defenseman. They've got Travis Hamonic there, obviously.
Exactly, yes.
So, I mean, he's a physical defenseman. So, I mean, that's just filling a need there. I mean, I think they had Dracena there last year. So
that's right. As he's
I mean,
exactly that, right.
That's all they're doing.
That's
there.
Replacing Dracena with Karkner in the sixth defense role on the right side.
The Montreal Canadiens might be interested in P.A. Parenteau. He's a guy who's got a lot of... He's an interesting guy in that he has blossomed when he's playing with John Tavares, and he's a free agent. And the question is, can he recreate the magic that he's had in Long Island with a different team in a different role with less talented line mates?
It's a good question.
And it's buyer beware, I think.
It's
he's definitely
beware
a buyer
well.
Beware there. If you had to pick one guy who's on the free agency market who you could say could very well be a bust, and depending on the amount of money
that's
he wants, Pia Parenteau is that guy, I think, for everybody.
Yeah, I think the one perk... Go ahead, Ezzy.
It's, I guess, a possibility, too. I mean, the Habs are probably going to lose Matthew Darche, so, I mean, there are a few holes that they're going to have on their roster, but yeah, I guess P.A. Parenteau, I mean, you have to be a little bit hesitant to sign him, knowing that his best years were played with Tavares, and he definitely benefited from that. But again, you know, the guys that are out there, the winners, and a guy like him won't cost that much, so it might not be a bad signing. I think we had him as a possible guy that the Jets could go after as a right winger. But you know, we'll see what happens. It looks like Montreal right now is in the front of the pack to get Parenteau.
18 goals last year, 49 assists. So, you know, obviously playing with Tavares is a huge benefit to him. But when we saw him in Winnipeg, he was arguably the best player on the occasions that we saw him play for the Islanders.
And we saw him three times last year.
Yeah, and I thought he was very good. Obviously, there's, you know, he's like Molson, too. When you play in the AHL for a consistent amount of time and you never really cracked it as a scorer, you always have that stigma as being an AHL player. I'm not so sure that's true here. And if you're Montreal, you get to add a scoring element, and you get to improve your depth on the wing, and maybe he takes a little bit of a discount because he's playing for the franchise he grew up admiring. So it's certainly worth the call that it has. And I think at this point, Parenteau's become quote-unquote overrated in the market, so overrated that he's actually now underrated again.
Yep. Everybody realized that they were rating him too high, and then just he reached the precipice, and he fell off,
and he's
starting back at the bottom.
Yeah.
And last guy that we'll talk about before we go to break, Jordan Tootoo, a guy that Winnipeg fans are interested in. A lot of chatter both in the print and amongst fans that Jordan Tootoo might be a guy that the Jets would look at. Rangers are apparently interested in him.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, Gary Lawless of the Free Press wrote the article a few days ago, I believe. And, you know, a lot of fans were, you know, Jordan Tootoo's a guy that obviously has the connection. And he's a guy that he's overcome some problems. He's had some problems in his life. And he entered the NHL substance abuse program. And obviously there's some concerns there. But he's a guy, like another guy, an energy guy on the fourth line. He'll fight. He'll stick up for his teammates. He was a very popular player in Nashville. One of the most popular players. I believe he was there for 7 years.
Burnt his bridges on his way out of town, though. Bridges complaining about ice time in the middle of the playoffs. You don't do that.
Tutu's an outspoken guy.
Well, you don't do that. That's one thing you don't do, and people around the NHL know that.
You know what, Drew? He'd be an upgrade here over Chris Thorburn.
In Winnipeg, I'm not disputing that whatsoever.
So we're on the right side there, and Chris Thorburn's deal is so small, you know, relative terms of NHL money, that you can put him as a 13th forward.
I think Chris Thorburn's what? I think $867,000.
Yeah, so you put him as a 13th forward, and you say, okay, whatever. You know, we're fine with that. In terms of Tootoo, he adds a nice physical element, and he can score a bit, and he'd be a nice fit on the fourth line of the Jets, but he'd also be a nice fit on the fourth line of most every team. So does he want to come back close to home, or does he just take, because I assume we probably won't be offering as much money as maybe another team or two.
And the Rangers are losing Brandon Press, so Jordan Tootoo seems like a logical fit there.
I like Tutu's game. He's built like a truck. And he can add a little bit of offense, and I think he's...
When he's on the ice, you certainly know that he's on the ice.
He'd be a worthy addition.
Well, we'll see that in about 90 minutes' time. The NHL free agency market will open up. Let's go to break. When we come back, Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us. We're going to shift into talking about the Jets and their free agency options. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Free Agents Frenzy Edition, live on location at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Welcome back to the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. On this Sunday morning, a happy Canada Day to everybody out there.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed. You can follow us on Twitter. We have the big screen with our Twitter up there. At Illegal Curve is us on Twitter. Also, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. And you can also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. We're pleased to welcome to the table now. Yes, our latest tweet is, hungover at the beach listening to At Illegal Curve. Keep your voices down, boys. My head hurts. That is our audience in a nutshell right there. Perfectly. DJ_Biff_Winnipeg. Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, and we can't guarantee that we're going to keep our voices down.
Shout out to DJ Biff Winnipeg.
But don't shout it out too loud. That would be painful.
Whisper
for him. Exactly. Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us at the table for the next half an hour or so. Ed, good morning. Thank you for joining us, first of all, and a happy Canada Day to you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on. It's cool.
We thought we'd spend the next half an hour, you know, leading up to 11 o'clock. That's when the doors open and the free agency frenzy begins and the signings can begin at that point. Thought we'd spend the next half an hour talking about the Winnipeg Jets, their prospects, their currently unsigned free agents, and, you know, who they might be targeting on the open market. Still unsigned by the Jets, you have Tanner Glass. Yeah. He's a UFA, so he'll be on the market in 90 minutes. Kyle Wellwood. Those are the two probably the most name players that are on the roster day in and day out. Mark Flood is still there.
Well, you have your Chris Mason and Jonas Gustafsson too.
And Chris Mason and Jonas Gustafsson on the back in the goaltending. And let's start with goaltending, because that's really the decision that I think most people are waiting on. Most people figure that the Jets brass is deciding between Gustafsson and Mason and weighing in what both of them want in terms of their contract demands.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of an interesting decision for those guys and for the Jets, because Mason's 36 years old. He made close to $2 million last year. Gustafsson's, I would say, still has upside. You know, we're still kind of unsure about where his career might go. But the last thing I heard was that Mason was still talking to the Jets, and he might have to take less money to come back because they put a lot of money on the table for Andre Pavlik, and he's not going to play a whole lot. Do you invest that much money in a guy that you're basically buying the guy in the room, the good backup guy that's going to help push Pavlik? That's a lot of money to spend on someone that's going to play 15, 20 games.
And it seemed to me that at the end of the season, Claude Noel didn't have that much confidence in Chris Mason. I mean, there were times where there's back-to-back games, or there were games that you thought, okay, here's a soft spot in the schedule, where if you're prearranging the schedule in the beginning of the season, this would be a game that Mason would play, and Mason didn't play. So if he doesn't have that confidence in him...
Yeah, they were in a playoff push. I'm not sure if that had, if they were just going to ride Pavlik out. But at the end of the year, he was saying... Right. You know, he was kind of worn out. That's why he didn't go to the World Championships. So you're right. If they had a guy that they could lean on a little bit more comfortably or feel more comfortable going to, then there were some spots in the schedule there, a lot of back-to-backs where they could have played him, but they didn't. So, but I know they like him. Claude Noel was here on Thursday with the Hustler and Lawless, and he talked about Chris Mason, and they like what he brings to the room, and you can't underestimate that too.
And he's certainly a good role model for Andre Pavlik. I mean, we were out after a game one night, and I think the two of them were out there together, if I remember. So there's certainly a good relationship that they have to factor in.
Yep.
But my concern is, you know, if something was to happen to Andre Pavlik, I mean, and it can happen, you know, it's reasonable that a player gets injured, can you rely on Chris Mason to be a NHL-caliber starting goaltender for, you know, more than 10 or 15 games a year? And I think that's a question Jets brass have to honestly ask of themselves at this point.
Well, and the other thing you have to wonder about is how – you have to look a little bit down the road here. You've got Eddie Pasquale in St. John's, who's really taken a step. He had a great second half of the year, and everybody sort of sees him as the guy that will slide into that role soon. Mm-hmm. So do you want, you know, you can't lock up some of these guys for too long if you've got someone in the minors that's ready to go, and that might factor into this too.
And Ed, I think you touched on it, and I think you're aware of this as well because you've talked to Chris Mason as well. He's prepared at 36 years old to realize that he's not going to be starting goalie in the NHL anymore. He's willing to take a hometown discount, if you want to call it that, and be a mentor. And you know, he's one of those guys, all the Jets say he's the hardest working guy on the team, and he's really well liked. So you have to factor that in as well, and I think that's a good point, that you're going to have a guy like Eddie Pasquale that will probably be coming along like a Corey Schneider. Well, he'll play under Pavlik because obviously Pavlik's, been given the 5-year deal, and he's going to be the number one goalie in the near future. So you have to factor that in as well. I mean, the Jets are thinking long term, so they're not. The problem that I had with that Gustafson signing is that because he is still unsigned, is that is a little bit of a concern with Pavlik, and he's not sure if he's going to be the number one goaltender. So I think that's a good point that they have to factor that in, and that's why I think Mason maybe. A week ago when they acquired Gustafson, everyone kind of said that, ourselves included, kind of wrote Mason off, but it looks like he's still in play and he could end up signing today.
Yeah, I think you guys were in the scrum at the end of the year when Chris Mason was, they were cleaning out their lockers, and he said, basically, I've got a decision to make whether I still think I'm a number one goalie or I'm willing to play the subsidiary role. And I think, you know, his last couple of years of his career, is that's what he's played. But that's a tough thing for athletes to decide. I got to back off now, and I'm not going to ever be the number one guy again.
I like Chris Mason. I mean, he's been on this program, and he was very good to us, and he's a good locker room influence. But I think anybody who thinks that Chris Mason, and no disrespect intended, who is anyone that thinks he's a legitimate number one goaltender in the NHL, is probably fooling themselves at this point in time.
Right. I mean, if he was 30 and you still, you know, weren't sure, I think he's 36 years old.
Right. Yeah,
he's at the end of his career.
Right.
So, you know, to me, if he does re-sign here, if he does sign anywhere, it's going to be for 1 or 2 years at the most.
That's exactly right. And Gustafson, too, though, for that matter, going to Gustafson, I don't think he hasn't proven himself, and his disaster that was Toronto the last couple of years hasn't entitled him to anything more than a year or 2 years at, you know, at max, and, you know, $1 million a year. So I think it really does boil down to a locker room question, largely. Mm-hmm. Because both of those guys aren't going to get a significant amount of money. Neither of them are going to get a significant number of years on their contract. It's a matter of, do the Jets feel Chris Mason can do the job as the backup goaltender better than Jonas Gustafsson at that point? Or is Jonas Gustafsson comfortable only playing 15 or 20 games a year, because you got to figure, given what they just gave Andrei Pavlik, they're planning on riding him.
Well, I don't know what kind of market there'd be out there for Gustafsson right now, but you talk to read a lot of what the Toronto guys were saying last year. You know, Toronto was in the playoff race into February, and it was because of him. He had a big play in that. His numbers might not reflect it, but he kept them in the fight for a long time when James Reimer was hurt. So I think that makes him a little bit more attractive in the open market than some of the other goalies out there. But it would be sort of I'm not going to say a risk signing, but if someone signs him, a team isn't signing him to be their potential number one goalie. It's to provide depth.
And if you're Gustafsson's agent and you're talking to Gustafsson, you say, well, they just signed a guy to a five-year deal here. Is this the place that you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
Because your chance, maybe you can prove it in a year
or
two.
But what are his options?
That's
what I wonder is, out there? There aren't very many places where you can say the number one job is up for grabs.
The only place that's really unsettled, New Jersey, depending on what happens with Marty Brodeur, but, we'll talk about Brodeur a little bit later on. But if they can't re-sign Marty Brodeur, may as well just shut the doors and ship off the franchise.
Well, that's what Larry Brooks wrote this morning. He said it would be the worst day in the franchise's history.
It would be the death knell to the New Jersey Devils if they can't re-sign Marty Brodeur, I would suggest.
And I think in terms of Gustafsson, maybe he looks to say, okay, maybe I want to play with a guy who's a veteran guy, maybe more apt to get injured. Maybe you can't play as many games, 55, 60 games, and I get that guaranteed 25, 30 games of... And the thing about goalies, when you put him into the right system and he gets the right coach with him, everybody says he's 6'3", almost 200 pounds, so he fills the net well. If he can get confident.
He's got a similar body type to Andrei Pavlik.
And people talk about Allaire in Toronto being a genius with some goalies. He screws up other goalies.
And he's one that he screwed up, apparently. Everybody in Toronto said, let him be an athlete, and he was too regimented, how you got to play.
That's Francois Allaire, the goaltending coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs we're talking about.
And you always have to wonder when a guy comes from the Swedish Elite League, has a lot of success, there's all these teams booing him, like Justin Schultz. You remember when he came in, obviously, they called him the monster, and then it never worked out. And then Allaire was obviously trying to switch up his style. So
he's certainly a guy you can buy low at, and you might get some great rewards out of
him. That's a good way to put it,
Way more than Chris Mason.
There's potential upside.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential upside there. Before we quickly go to break, another guy I want to talk about is Tanner Glass.
That's a tough one for me with the GST line.
I know, Izzy. We'll get you some counseling afterwards for that.
No, but Tanner Glass, obviously Jim Slater signed. He signed, it seems like about 3 weeks ago now. It looked like Tanner Glass was going to re-sign, and now we're not sure about that.
According to Pierre LeBrun, apparently Gustafsson is going to test the market.
He's going to test the market.
That's good news for Chris Mason coming back to Winnipeg.
Assuming that that's the agreement, so you might see an email from the Jets sometime soon if that means that a deal with Chris Mason is done. But
might be one of the first ones we get today.
Well, that could be done now. They don't have to wait till 11 o'clock because it's their own player.
Yep.
But we'll wait and see on that one, incidentally. But Tanner Glass, it seems it's an odd one because people thought, his career year, which isn't anything to write home about, but he had the most... legitimate role with the Jets, third line that he's ever had in the NHL. He's not a third line player. Is it a case of he's asking for too much money, or the Jets just don't want to bring him back?
I heard it was that he was asking for too much money. That and then you get this close, you might want to get out there and test what's out there, hoping that the offer from the Jets is still sitting there, say at 1 o'clock today.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Tanner Glass played for $700,000 last year, and what he provided is, he's a veteran guy in the room. He led the team in hits, kind of a basher, crasher. We all know what he did on the GST line.
Yep.
The decision that the organization has is that there's other people in the organization that can do that role. And that's the problem with some of these guys. They have a lot of their bottom six. There are guys in St. John's that can do that role.
Yep.
So
what
are you, again, it's the Chris Mason thing. Are you paying for stuff that we don't see on the ice? It's stuff in the room. It's leadership. Yep. And you have to be careful about that.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll deal with more Jets free agents and who they might be targeting. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our free agent special, live on location at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined on stage by Ed Tate. We're down at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Come down, join us, have a great breakfast special like the people in the room are doing so at the moment. Ezzy, I think, just ordered a big bowl of bacon. Is that right, Ezzy?
Yeah, it's tough to eat. You know, we've got Ed on, obviously, for another segment. It's tough to eat between breaks. I just had to scarf that omelet down. It's delicious.
I didn't know that bacon came in bowl form.
Yeah, you can get an entire bowl of bacon here at the Free Press Cafe,
that's
and
exciting.
It's delicious.
Yes, and that's
crispy bacon.
Definitely what you needed right now this morning. Anyways, going back to the Winnipeg Jets free agents, Pierre LeBrun, and here's the direct quote from Pierre LeBrun. No surprise, but Jonas Gustafsson going to the market didn't feel Winnipeg was a fit for him. So if you read between the lines, you can welcome back Chris Mason as a Winnipeg Jet.
I'm really excited about that.
I'm assuming.
It's the right move. I mean,
let's not get carried away and talk about it just yet.
Okay.
But I'm assuming that that's what that means,
yes.
Is that they're not going to, maybe they're in on Marty Brodeur. Anyway, that's
there might be somebody else out there that they're interested in. There's other goalies, but based on what we've been saying and hearing, I'll be surprised if this doesn't mean that Chris Mason isn't back.
Yeah, exactly right. Some other free agents, Kyle Wellwood. Let's start with him. He had his career year last year with the Winnipeg Jets. Doesn't sound like he's coming back. Probably wants.
That's a weird one to me. He made, I'm checking here, $700,000 last year. I heard he wants substantially more money. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But he played second line at the end of the year. He was very valuable. I can't see that he would have a role like that anywhere else, hardly in the NHL. He didn't sign in Winnipeg till Labor Day last year, Labor Day.
Right.
So it's not like there was a high demand for him. That's a weird one to me, and I'm a little bit leery about, what his agent might be whispering in his ear, but if there's an offer on the table from a place that wanted you, I think I'd be quick to sign.
I think he's hoping to get his payday as an NHLer.
Yeah.
You know, for the last number of years, he's been one of these guys who bounced from San Jose to Vancouver and didn't sign in Winnipeg, like you said, till Labor Day. So I mean, I think he's hoping that his year last year might get him a 2-year deal where he gets a few million dollars in his pocket and he's set for life.
The problem with him is that. And I don't mean this disrespectfully, but he's got a bad reputation still out there that he's trying to overcome about the fitness that he had to battle.
Yep.
Whether it's right or wrong, it's out there about him.
And the style of hockey he plays is not what you would describe as an aggressive style of hockey.
He's smart.
He avoids contact. He avoids contact like the plague.
Right.
I mean, you have to, if you're signing him, you have to know what you're getting, and you have to have that very specialized niche role that only he can fill. I mean, he's got great hands, beautiful hands, great in the shootout. But if you expect him to get into any dirty areas whatsoever, it's not going to happen.
And, Ed, I think that's a good point. And, Kyle Wellwood did very well for himself. As you mentioned, he was passed over after, having a few, poor years. And I think that the problem, I think, from the Jets' perspective is that, sure, he put up his career year and he really came in and he gave them their secondary scoring. But looking ahead, he's not a physical guy, and in that sense, he's one-dimensional. He's a great hands guy. And Kyle Wellwood was one of those guys in the first year that was a fan favorite because you could root for him because, he was one of those guys that wasn't expected to do much on that second line. But then when you've got other guys that could potentially step up, whether that's a Spencer Mrazek, and we were talking about that during the break, Spencer Mrazek, came in and he was a point a game with the Jets, and he's a guy that, all signs point to he's going to be an everyday NHLer. So if you have Kyle Wellwood asking for a raise, it's tough to give it to him knowing that he's one-dimensional and he's not going to give you much more than what he gave you last year.
Yeah, the other name that I might throw out there that could, they might have penciled in on that spot on the second line is Ivan Teligan. I mean, everybody is raving about his world-class speed. He can't go back to junior, so he's either going to play with St. John's or up here with the big club. I was impressed with him in training camp last year. If he's grown as much as they say, if he puts on some weight this summer, what's to stop them from saying, let's put the kid right here on our number two line and on right wing?
He'll be at the Jets development camp next week.
Yeah, right, something to try out there. Go
one
ahead,
thing
Richard.
I want to ask yet is, it hasn't really been talked about a lot, is Tobias Enstrom.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming into his final year in his contract, pending UFA. Everybody in the NHL wants a puck-moving defenseman. Is this the time where in the next week or two or 3 weeks the Jets look to see if they can re-up him? And if they can't, is he heading towards a trade market possibly?
Well, this is something that we've been talking about. It's been kind of out there since, I would say, January, about if you're going to fix this team, if you want to upgrade your top six, let's say that's your number one need, then and you can't go buy it in free agency because you're not going to be able to outbid teams for Zach Parise, then you have to trade for it. And their maybe their best asset to get some help that way might be moving a Tobias Enstrom, especially when you know that a Paul Postma, the same kind of player, is ready to move up. It's a bit of a risk because I think that a lot of what Enstrom does is underrated too, you know, especially lining up with Dustin Byfuglien covering up for a lot of his mistakes. But it's going to be a juicy one. That might be how they fix themselves in during the summer here, is through a trade.
Well, you speak about Enstrom, and that was the guy that, you know, really from the end of the season, when you looked at and you heard the commentary that was coming out of Philadelphia where they were unhappy with James Van Riemsdyk, there was the thought process, at least my thought process, was Enstrom and Van Riemsdyk might have been a matchup. Well, we know Van Riemsdyk ended up going to Toronto for Shen. In my books, Enstrom is a better player than Luke Shen is, so I don't know if it was even bandied about in the over at the arena, but you know, it's interesting to think if the Jets even considered making an Enstrom. You would probably get Van Riemsdyk and something for Enstrom based on the way the Toronto deal went down.
And I guess the big fear is Enstrom heads into his final season under contract, and then that starts hanging over the team and
that's
Enstrom.
Knowing that Zach Bogosian wants to stay here, and you're probably going to want to sign him to a longer-term deal, a 4 or 5 year deal. So
I can understand if they don't want to re-sign Toby Enstrom. I mean, they just drafted Trouba. They have a lot of they have a lot of money locked up on their back end. Granted, Hainsey's contract comes off the book after this year, so maybe you use some of that money to re-sign Enstrom. But if you're going to trade him, if you're not going to make a really concerted, serious effort to get Enstrom back under contract, trade him today as opposed to trading him at the deadline. You'll get more value for him today.
Well, that's a great point, because there's going to be teams that want to upgrade and help themselves today that don't get who they want. Mm-hmm. That doesn't get Ryan Suter, or someone that doesn't get the puck-moving defenseman that's so coveted in this league. Then you start getting on the phone and say, okay, so you didn't get A, B, or C. How about our guy right here, and what can you offer for him? I'm sure that conversation is going to happen if it hasn't already, because again, I don't see the Jets really upgrading their top six today in free agency.
Right.
Unless, maybe you think, you guys talked about it earlier, maybe a Yuri Hudler or somebody could help them. But let's face it, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful again, but if Zach Parise is wheeled out here today in a Jets jersey, I'd be shocked.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'd
eat that jersey.
That's consistent with everything that the Jets have said, with Kevin Cheveldayoff saying that they're going to build through the draft and develop. And it's funny,
I can accept that, but you need to have more top six talent. And with all due respect to the GST line, they're not a third line in the NHL. They're a fourth line. And all due respect to some of the line matchups the Jets had out there last year, I'm selfish. I want to see top-flight NHL talent, and I want to see it on the Winnipeg Jets, not on the teams that are coming to visit.
Right, Drew, but the problem with that is, you'd like to see more top six talent. We'd love to see Jonathan Toews as a center. We'd love to see Zach Parise. It's not going to happen. So then you go. Then you get into the secondary talent. And then, do you really want to spend $4 million on a guy like Alexander Semin, or $5 million on an Alexander Semin? That's the question.
And I understand your point as well there, Ezzy. But it's just a matter of, I appreciate building through the draft, and building through the draft is your long-term keys to success. But at some point in time, and I'm not saying it has to be today, but at some point in time, you do need to shell out money for some legitimate NHL talent.
And the question, the question for Ed is, do they possibly offend the fan base, quote-unquote, by putting out essentially the exact same roster next year? Do they have to make one or two moves just to make it look like, try to improve, but also make it look like they're trying to change things up and improve a bit?
Yeah, what's going to be really interesting to see next week at the development camp, and then the fall camp, the training camp, is how ready is Mark Scheifele? How ready is Ivan Tlekin? Because you talk about you wanting to see top six.
Exactly.
Those are guys that they've locked in for those spots.
Right.
So the question is it this fall?
That's
is it down
right.
the road?
Yep.
And so,
if they put out the same lineup that they put out last year, if Tlekin needs another year, and if Scheifele is going back to juniors for another year, the Southeast Division has improved dramatically in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Once they've been improving, that means that everybody else
That's where you mentioned how patient are people going to be, and, we'll find out. I think the building's still going to be full. People are going to be going crazy. But at some point, you have to wait. You know, you have to see if those guys are ready to take those spots on the top six, and I think they are. And if you pencil those two in and they look like they're ready, it changes
sure.
things. You're right, because you're moving guys in your one and two lines down to the third, and the GST line at their back becomes the fourth line. It really changes things.
It'll be interesting to see. 1 hour's time from now, the NHL free agency market opens up. Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, fellas. It was fun.
I'm glad to have it. You're heading down to MTS Center, where you got to hurry up and wait
there,
now.
Yeah, all day.
Exactly. Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Come down and join us. 1 hour until free agency opens up. Under 60 minutes until the free agency market opens in the NHL. We're live at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Come down, have some breakfast, enjoy seeing radio made live and in person. You can also follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. New addition to the table, Brian Munsey. Good morning.
Morning, guys. The first official news on Free Agent Frenzy Day today is Ed Tate is officially deaf. These headphones are unbelievable. What are you doing here, guys? Wow. No, you know, it's an exciting day. I was up at about 7 this morning and kind of looking online a little bit, and the phone was busy overnight. I shut it off at about 8 last night. And it's interesting just to get the feed and the excitement of everybody across the National Hockey League, not only obviously here in Winnipeg, but, you know, in all the markets right now. The Zach Parise thing is really starting to heat up. The Detroit Red Wings have arrived in Ontario here in the last couple of minutes to make their pitch today. Shane Doan just announcing that he's going to wait until July 9th to decide if he will leave Glendale or not, because obviously he is an option for teams here today.
Let me jump in there on that, Shane Doan. The reason July 9th is the day is because the citizens of Glendale, I think they have until July 8th, to present a petition containing, I believe it's 1,500 signatures.
Right.
And if they get those 1,500 signatures, the Greg Jamieson lease deal will go to a referendum in November. So that's what Shane Doan's waiting until the 8th to see. If they don't get those 1,500 signatures, the Jamieson lease will go through. You would think he would then become the owner of the Phoenix Coyotes, finally putting that saga to bed, and then Shane Doan would re-sign in Phoenix.
Yeah, you know, and you feel for a guy like him that's been around through this whole thing, because obviously Olson right now, their equipment manager, the last two remaining guys that were here in Winnipeg, and they've gone through this whole thing, the saga, the ups and downs. There's no level ground for those guys. I know Stan, and I've talked to him a little bit behind the scenes, and, you know, they just shake their head almost here on a weekly basis, because at some point it comes up, is your team going to be here, is it not? And after a while, especially on a day like this, you just want to focus on what's going on the ice and how good your hockey club will be whenever they have an opportunity to get back on the ice here, depending on what goes through on the CBA.
The Shane Doan question is a very interesting one, because this is a guy who would have a ton of suitors in the NHL.
Absolutely.
You know, he'd be very sought after. But, you know, do these people, you know, do the teams that would want Shane Doan, do they spend their money before July 9th rolls around, or do they hold back some money in order to, in the chance that Shane Doan really does become a UFA? He's sort of in the, he's in this holding period for another week or so, where he's not, his unrestricted free agency doesn't really begin for another 8 days, which is sort of bizarre when you think about it in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and a note on Zach Parise as well. Bob McKenzie from TSN just sending an email out to our hockey group that Parise will definitely go to market. Devils not necessarily out, but everyone else is in. So Lou's going to play his cards here today and see what goes on.
The problem is Lou can play all the cards he wants. I don't think Lou has any money, and that's the real problem.
Good point
there
by you.
In New Jersey.
They didn't make any money during the Stanley Cup final?
Well, you know, it's amazing.
$30 million they made, apparently.
And that, but unfortunately, that goes to all their debtors. And you know, that's not Marty Brodeur, and that's not Zach Parise. The debtors want to get paid, and then, you know, at that point in time, they'll back off a little bit. And that's, it's really, I mean, can you imagine Marty Brodeur in a different jersey?
Well, it was interesting. I was listening to you guys driving in when you were talking to Ed Tate. And that is one thing that you look at. And for me this year, there were a few different occasions during the Jets season that you look at now as you sit back and you're playing golf or you're sitting on a patio with buddies talking about the season that was. And one of the neat ones for me was when the Jets went into New Jersey and you saw Marty Brodeur. You walk into the locker room and there he is just sitting in the corner getting his gear ready. Doesn't have a lot of people around him, but it's just, that's him.
Yep.
You know, he's been around
so long.
There's
an aura around him.
He's one of those iconic figures that's really neat in the league. And you see other ones too, some of the other big superstars. But I think Brodeur, because of his age, obviously, is one of those players in the league, and there's not a lot of them left that really bring different generations together of hockey fans here in the league.
I think using a term like a living legend, and obviously
absolutely
one of my all-time favorites, and it was an absolute pleasure to interview him. Just transitioning back to the Winnipeg Jets, Munsey, and I know I asked you this off-air, what are you expecting today? Because you and Ed, obviously, you're going to be heading down to the MTS Center later, and we'll be talking to you later. What kinds of moves are you expecting today? Because we know that, the Jets have some signings to make, both UFAs and RFAs. We were talking about some of them earlier, Chris Mason and Tanner Glass. Are we to expect that, or do you think there might be something else in the cards possibly?
I wouldn't be surprised if we see maybe some of those depth players that were up and down last year between here and St. John's sign a deal. If they liked what they had last year in Winnipeg, and I think for the most part everybody did, that we talked to between cleanup day here in Winnipeg and then the players that wrapped up the season when the Ice Caps went on that long run in the Calder Cup playoffs. I know I played golf with Kevin Clark yesterday, and he was just talking about the fun and the excitement they had with the Ice Caps. It was the same here in Winnipeg, except for it was obviously a smaller level and not as much hype across North America. But everybody you talked to inside the organization really liked what came to them, you know, both on and off the ice. So, you know, no one knows right now except for Kevin Cheveldayoff who it would be. I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, a guy like Derek Meech sign a contract in the next 24 to 48 hours or 72 if you want to stretch it out. The one thing I think that all Jet fans have to remember a little bit here today is this isn't the deadline of free agency.
Right.
It's just the start.
Yeah.
So if Winnipeg doesn't do something today, or if your other favorite team across the league doesn't do something today, don't think your team's dead last and are going to finish 30th. You know, there's an opportunity here where the players, and this is one neat thing about free agency right now, is those players that have options, that have gone through their time, that have worked through to be either restricted or unrestricted free agents, you know, they have a little bit of game now that they can play off ice with their agents and hold on and see if your team or your team is going to send us something. Which deal is better for me, the player?
Well, let me get your take on this. We were talking about this earlier on the show, and we were saying right off the start, and we were saying the Justin Schultz saga from yesterday that really played out. My perspective, it seemed a little unseemly. You know, and Bob McKenzie, late last night, he had about a 6 or 7 part tweet, and, you know, I respect Bob immensely, talking about, you know, there's no reason to criticize this guy. He did what anybody else would do if they had options and free agency and everything else. Why, from your perspective, do you think Schultz handled his situation fairly yesterday?
Absolutely, because I think what I was just referencing on the fact that, you know, players have gone through a contract or players have played through different scenarios, at the end of the day, even when you look at, I know you guys were talking about Kyle Wellwood earlier on wanting more money, you can't blame players for the contract that's presented to them.
I wouldn't.
And that's the exact idea here with Schultz. You know, he looked at the 5 or 6 different teams that it got whittled down to either by himself or by his agent. And I wasn't surprised at all to see him go to Edmonton.
Right.
Based on all the young talent they have up front, Devan Dubnyk is becoming a star goaltender in the NHL amongst the young players. And their blue line is thin. So this gives him a great opportunity to step in and have legitimate ice time right now where, you know, if he was going to come to Winnipeg, does he concede Bufflin, Enstrom, Bogosian? Right. No, no, and no.
Yep. The Jets weren't really even in on
him. No, they weren't.
Right, but you're
using them as the example.
Absolutely.
When you look at other teams, you know, if you want to go to anywhere in the league, if you want to go to San Jose, is he going to knock off Burns? Is he going to knock off anyone else that's on that club? No, but Edmonton gives him an opportunity to play again whenever the season starts.
Well, and you mentioned that. Do you think that we're starting on time this year?
The hockey fan in me is pleading for this thing to start, but everybody we talked to, especially in Pittsburgh at the draft, we were down there for 5 days, and nobody that I talked to on either side was confident that we would have the season start when it's scheduled to start on paper. Now, that wasn't negotiations. Obviously, they've just got underway here since the weekend began, and the first really unformal, informal talk, however you want to word it, has gone on between the players and the league. Like I said before, I hope it does, because you know, it was such a magical ride here for everybody last season as to what we all got to go through, and we all want to go through it again starting on time. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I've looked at the schedule. I've checked to see where, you know, the great spots will be on the road, where there could be a downtime, where they're going to go for the first time this year, i.e. Dallas into California. Yep. Those games are later on in the schedule, so right. I think we'll see those anyway.
But that Friday, that's a Friday or Saturday, well, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday in California or whatever.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it's a Blackhawks game at home that everybody wants to see, and that's
exactly
the second game
of the
season.
That's early for Johnny Toews to come in here. So, and that'd be the only time that they would see him, based on the Jets are still right now in the Eastern Conference, right, until next year, hopefully, when that whole thing goes forward with them moving into Conference B,
yeah,
I believe,
whatever,
is what the league is still calling it right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things, I think, that have people excited about hockey, and they should be. It's the greatest game in the world. It's the most fun to watch on a night-by-night basis. So hopefully we go, but like I said right now, I'm not crossing my fingers, but I really hope I'm wrong.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I enjoy when the owners are going to plead poverty coming up in a little while. On the owners are, we can't afford it. We need to restructure the game. The finances don't work, and they're the ones handing out Dennis Wiedemann $25 million. I mean, it's,
yeah, but the Calgary Flames don't have much. You know, they're one of those teams that we talk about Edmonton. They're on the Schultz situation. I don't think Calgary was in those top five or six, but another team, when you look at their depth chart right now, there's not a lot there in front of Mika Kiprusoff, so they have to add somebody that gives those Flames fans an opportunity to wake up this morning and say, you know, we do have somewhat of an opportunity now to try them a little bit closer here into that number eight spot in the Western Conference.
You know, you mentioned the CBA and the belief amongst many people, or some people, or whatever you want to call it, that, you know, there might be some stoppage, whether that's, you know, a few weeks or a month or something like that.
Yeah.
How knowing that that's a possibility, how is that going to affect this free agency period, knowing that there's the possibility that there might be a work stoppage, or there might be term contracts? Because obviously we saw Sidney Crosby's contract, and we talked about it yesterday, and we were a little bit surprised by that, knowing that the owners might want to put a 5 to 7 year limit. So how is, knowing that there might be a lockout next year, how is that going to affect, teams, whether it's the Jets or any other team?
It's not, and Mark Chipman was in here with Hustler and Lawless this week. I talked to a number of GMs in Pittsburgh at the NHL draft, and it's business as forward,
right,
because what if they get this thing settled here in 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden teams have said, well, we're going to hold off to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
They
miscalculation
miss out on a number of players, yep, or opportunities that are presented to them. So, no, there's no change in structure. Yep. Kevin Cheveldayoff
and his crew, they're playing under the rules they're playing under.
Exactly. Yep. Chevy and his crew at MTS Center right now are getting their cards in order here. All the other 29 GMs are doing the same thing right now in their respective headquarters, and they're moving forward here. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it's game on. They're planning as if they're playing the schedule that was released here a couple,
absolutely,
of weeks ago,
right,
and then all of a sudden if it comes out and they're not, well, then it goes on hold for everybody. But heck, you look at it right now, we're planning our broadcast schedule, we're planning road trips and everything else, and you move forward until somebody says you're not.
Exactly right. Brian Munns, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, I should have mentioned off the start, here on TSN 1290.
At Jets Voice 1290.
At Jets Voice 1290.
Because we're all
Twitter
about Twitter
as well
in the background here.
Yeah, this is, you guys are high tech here now. Nicely done. I like it.
You haven't seen when it comes 3D at you. If you're wearing your 3D glasses, it really jumps out at you.
No, it looks good.
Anyways, Brian, thanks very much for joining us. Well, if anything breaks down at MTS Center, we'll be talking to you throughout the next 90 minutes or 2 hours or so.
Yeah, we'll be hanging out. And, of course, the Gold Eyes will be on TSN 1290 this afternoon down, I believe they're in Wichita. I was talking to Paul Edmonds today where he said it's 40 degrees.
Lovely.
Already.
We thought it was hot here.
Yeah, exactly. But, we'll have updates for everybody all day long. And apparently this thing could go into the early morning hours as well. So we'll keep you abreast as to what's going on all day.
Sounds very good. Brian Munns, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, down here at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here at the live on location at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Some news, not a surprise, but Jordan Staal has re-signed in Carolina. A long-term contract, apparently 10 years and $60 million, which is the exact same deal that he turned down from the Pittsburgh Penguins before he was traded to Carolina.
So you can't say it's all about the money.
He wanted to play with his brother.
Yeah, he wanted to play, and he wanted to play a top two role.
Yeah, he wanted to play, you know, he was going to be the third line center in Pittsburgh for the foreseeable future, and he wanted to play with his brother, Eric, in Carolina, so he took the exact same deal that the Penguins turned down from the Penguins, and he wanted to re-sign, I don't begrudge him at all,
That's fine.
He wanted to play with his brother. Why shouldn't he play with his brother? That's fine. Let's talk goaltenders, guys, before the free agency period opens up in about 45 minutes time from now. Let's start with Marty Brodeur. Do you think he's going to end up as a New Jersey Devil?
Yeah, I do. I think he ends his career as a New Jersey Devil. I do think, though, that if he does hit the market, I think that two teams that'll be very interested in him will be the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Chicago Blackhawks. He'll be a good fit in both of those cities. But I think that Lou Lamoriello can't let him go. I mean, they still have to spend some money, Drew, and to let the face of the franchise go. I mean, they don't have to. They can miss the playoffs for the next 2 years. So long as they have Brodeur, I mean, they stay faced, right? You can't let... He is the guy there. He's the Teemu Selanne of New Jersey for Jets fans to relate to it, and you can't let him go. Remember, I realize that Jersey has no money and they have issues and all that stuff. Sure, they still need to get to the salary cap floor. So it's not... And don't get me wrong, they have a fair amount of money tied up in Kovalchuk, Eliash, all those guys, and they're paying Kovalchuk a lot more money than his cap hit reflects. Even so, you need a goalie. I mean, how much is Marty going to ask for? I don't think the moon.
So, I would agree with you. I don't think he's going to get much more than... I mean, if he... You know, he could get it done for $5 million at most.
At most, I think.
At most.
And it's on a one-year deal. Right? A one- or two-year deal. Like.
If they don't re-sign Marty Brodeur, is there a reason for the New Jersey Devils to be around?
Well, you wonder what's going to happen then. You do wonder what's going to happen.
Because, I mean, you know, he would take... he's not going to demand top dollar. He's not going to, you know, he just wants a fair contract, would figure.
Yep.
So as long as he gets fair contract...
And I think he's hiring Pat Friesen not because he wants to negotiate with Lou, but because he wants to negotiate with the rest of the league and hasn't done it before. Really good article in the New York Post this morning, Larry Brooks writing about how, you know, what it would do to the Devils to lose Brodeur and how Brodeur came about not having an agent for all those years. It's a good remiss. So we'll probably link it on our Twitter.
At Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Twitter there and send us your comments as we approach the start of NHL free agency. The other goaltender that is really being bandied about is Roberto Luongo. We talked about it, you know, in depth on yesterday's program on our preview show. And Richie, you pretty much were apoplectic about the fact that you can't understand why there is any legitimate market for Roberto Luongo.
And legitimate market meaning that they'd give up anything for him.
Exactly, where you'd give up an asset for him.
Why would you?
Well,
if I'm Toronto Maple Leafs or I'm the Florida Panthers, I say, Mike Gillis, you have over $9 million locked up in two goaltenders for next year.
Yep.
I'm doing you a favor by taking a 10-year deal from you that you made a mistake on. I don't owe you anything. If anything, you should be giving me a draft pick to take this contract.
And Richie, the thing with Roberto Luongo is, and this is what you mentioned yesterday. He's a great goaltender. Great goaltender.
He's good. Yeah, for sure.
But that contract, I mean, again, going back to what we were talking about yesterday when we were previewing today. I mean, that contract is just it is going to hamstring you, and it is going to be an albatross. Even if Luongo ends up giving you better goaltending, you look at a team that really stands out as a team that could really use him, but it would probably not make the most sense is Chicago. Look at the Chicago Blackhawks, and they just had absolutely terrible goaltending in the playoffs. But the Toronto Maple Leafs are also a team that could really use that really good number one goaltender, but if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, are you going to give up a prospect, maybe a first-round pick? And that's probably what they're asking, by the way.
But you're not giving up that.
Which they shouldn't be asking, but you almost have to. But at this point,
the goaltending market, as you look at the free agents available, I mean, they're not great, obviously. I mean, you're looking at guys like Chris Mason, Dan Ellis, Jonas Gustafsson, Hedberg, and Clemenson. You're looking at backup goalies, okay? So you have backup goalies that are available. Sure. But if you're Florida, the leverage you have, of course, is that you have Jakob Markstrom in the system. Why would you bring a guy in who's a 10-year deal when you have a great young goalie in the system? Ottawa has three goalies, Ben Bishop, Robin Leonard, and Craig Anderson. So there's a guy there you can nab. There's a guy in L.A., Bernier, you can nab because Jonathan Quick to sign a 10-year deal. So there's so many options. Why would I take on Roberto Luongo's 10-year deal?
Darren Dreger of TSN reports that Ryan Smith has re-signed with the Edmonton Oilers a two-year deal, $2.25 million per year.
That's fair.
We expected that.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's fair.
With the likes of Taylor Hall and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jordan Eberle and now Nail Yakupov, Ryan Smith is the perfect player.
Yeah.
And, you know, going ahead, and I'm not the only one that thinks this. I think, you know, some people think next year, some people think, I think it's going to be more like 2 years. Be great if Ryan Smith never won a Stanley Cup. I mean, you look at the guys that he's going to come up with, and you have to think that a couple years from now, he's going to have a shot to get a cup.
Look, he's going to be able to play in Edmonton. He's Edmonton.
He better after he demanded out of L.A. and they won a cup.
Right. I mean, he's going to be able to play in Edmonton until, you know, he doesn't want to play hockey anymore. They'll always find room for Ryan Smith at a reasonable contract.
He has to. I mean, he demanded out of L.A. basically to Edmonton.
Yeah, he only wants
L.A.
to play
won
in
the cup.
I know.
And he has to stay there. So, he, I mean, the leverage there is actually all Edmonton's.
Right. And I mean, I think they even may have... $2.25 million, well, it's a fair contract. It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's fair contract
for everybody. Two years, too.
I mean, 2 years. It doesn't hurt anybody.
Ryan Smith started the season off well last year and wore down. Ryan Smith is a shadow of his former self.
Yep.
But he's good in the room. He's a hard worker. He's a good role model. He can still go in front of the net and toss him some goals, play second power play. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
And he needs to understand that he's going to be playing a limited role, a more reduced role in the Edmonton Oilers now.
That. I mean, up front, you said Yakupov, Hall, and Nugent Hopkins, and you have Eberle, and you have Gagne, and you have other guys there that can do the scoring. So he needs to provide a physical presence in the front of the net and be a role model.
Well, let's finish off the goaltenders before we have to go to break. There's Jonas Gustafsson, he's a UFA now. Let's start with Gustafsson.
But if you're Gustafsson's agent, Drew, I mean, of course you're going to play the market because you're the best young goalie available in the market.
Do you think there's a significant market for him?
I don't know if there's a significant market for him, but if I'm looking at any other goalie... Rolis, aside from Brodeur, Rolis and Michael Leighton, Hedberg, Ellis, Clemenson. Gustafsson certainly has the most upside. So,
an upgrade probably for the team to me. And I mean, we know this. The Tampa Bay has signed Anders Lindback. Pardon me, traded for him.
Yeah.
So we know that they might be fine with that. But a team that really needs a goaltender is Chicago. They might need a goaltender more than anybody. Chicago and Toronto, those are the two teams right now that need a goaltender. I mean, most teams are pretty good in goal.
Yeah, Chicago doesn't seem to be too interested in upgrading on Corey Crawford, which might be to their own detriment.
Well, I don't know about that, Drew.
Well, they're definitely not in on Roberto Luongo.
After last year's... Right, but that's a 10-year deal again. After last year's playoff debacle from Crawford, they have to be looking at some kind of at least a two-goalie system there that they're going to try and ride. And Ray Emery... The thing is, of course, they gave Ray Emery that guaranteed contract, right?
Right.
So now they have two goalies on the books right now. But you have two goalies on the books for reasonable cap hits, so you can maneuver it if you need to have an improvement there. Because Emery is pulling up right now. Emery's making 1.15 and Crawford 2.6. So combined there, you're paying these guys less than $4 million. You can maneuver it if you have to.
There's flexibility. I mean, there's always... These guys get creative if they need to.
Yep.
They have to get creative because usually they hand out bad contracts,
and they haven't
which
handled,
forces them they, to get creative
they
ha- afterwards.
They haven't handled the post-cup roster well.
No, we talked about that yesterday as well. Other goaltenders, I mean, so that's pretty much it for the goaltenders market at that point in time.
Scott Clemenson's on there.
Well, Scott Clemenson's going to go wherever Scott Clemenson gets an offer. He's not going to demand anything too crazy or expect anything.
He's a good goaltender, though.
He's a serviceable backup. He's certainly a serviceable backup. I don't have any complaints about Scott Clemens. And he played a role with Florida, and they expect Markstrom will come in and play that role next year.
3 years ago, when Marty Brodeur was injured, Clemenson played really well.
Yeah.
But because it's Marty Brodeur, you gotta give the net back to Marty.
Did he go to Toronto for a year, or am I making that up?
Clemenson?
Yeah.
Clemenson, I don't believe, ever played
Maybe
for Toronto.
Maybe he was talked about going to Toronto. Yeah. I can't remember. But you're right. He played very well with...
I feel like he did, actually. I'll check that.
Check that out.
If he did, it was for a very short time. It doesn't sound like something that was familiar.
No.
Remus is giving us the... it was only three games. Yeah. See, Remus is on there.
Remus is
on the ball today.
Okay. Well,
Remus, you're really pitching a no hitter right now.
Anyways, these updates on their Twitter page @IllegalCurve. That's on the big board here at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the UFA forwards that are coming up for auction in about 31 minutes time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. And we're also live in person at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe.
10:32 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live at the Winnipeg Free Press News Cafe. Come on down, have some breakfast on this beautiful Canada Day. The free agency market opens up 28 minutes from now. How soon?
How many seconds is that?
Well, I don't know how many. I can do some simple math if you want in my head. But
28 times 60.
How soon after the market opens do you think we got our first signing?
5 minutes.
You have 5 minutes? Ezzy, what's your prediction?
Well, it's funny, you know, we're hearing about the Ryan Smith contract
it's
and the Jordan Staal.
It's just a quick answer. Yeah. It doesn't need a soliloquy.
Okay. I like soliloquies. I'm going to say 11:02.
11:02.
2 minutes.
Okay, thanks. There you go. Let's talk about the free agency forwards. It really starts with Zach Parise, and we've talked about him. He wants significant dollars. He wants, you know, a $12 million signing bonus to start. Apparently, he wants another $12 million paid to him next July 1st. So July 1st, 2013, he wants another $12 million. So you'd be committing $24 million in one calendar year to just start talking to Zach Parise.
Didn't I have to pay that to talk to you when I wanted to join Illegal Curve?
That's exactly the truth, yes.
See, I want to jump in here, though. I think, you know, we're talking about, you know, the amount of money that certain guys are asking for. And, you know, Richie obviously went to UND. Parise went to UND.
It doesn't have to do with anything.
Well, no, I mean, you've seen him play. I mean, and I know you like him as much as I do. I think if there's one guy out there that deserves this amount of money, and I'm including Ryan Suter, it's Parise. I think talent-wise, he's you know, maybe top five. You know, and there was the injury that he suffered. But if you look at, you know, the way he played in the playoffs for the Devils this year, you know, his combination of speed and skill it's really, there's only a select group of players that can offer that.
Well,
and
then where do you see Zach? Are we in agreement that Zach Parise is not coming back to New Jersey?
I think, you know, it's funny. Richie and I were talking about this, you know, earlier this morning. I mean, it was clear that Zach Parise wasn't going to come back after he signed the one-year deal last summer. And, you know, there's a long list of players that in New Jersey could have probably signed a second long-term deal, and it didn't happen.
Well,
Gomez, Niedermeyer.
That's true. That's a good point. I think, though, this is probably what they're going to do is go out there, negotiate a deal, come back to New Jersey and ask if they can match, and then leave it up to Zach to decide what he wants to do. I don't think the Devils are going to be able to match anyway, so I think it's probably going to be a moot point.
Yeah, and the thing is,
If you're Zach Parise, where is your destination? You know who's interested in you. You know who's in your market. You know who's going to pay for you. Where do you want to go if you're Zach Parise, knowing everything that, you know, looking at the entire team,
where do you
the
want to go?
Entire franchise
you
as a whole?
Probably go to Pittsburgh or Detroit because you get to play with Datsyuk and you get to play in Detroit with Kenny Holland and you get to play with Crosby. And those are the two appealing places.
Do you buy Los Angeles as a potential destination here? I mean, because there's a lot of chatter that the dark horse team. I mean, we know the Senators are there to make a pitch. They would be an upset if they
would
bought
be.
Them.
Yes.
The dark horse team, you know, coming from the back of the pack, might be the Los Angeles Kings. There's a lot of talk that the Kings are going to make a strong push after Zach Parise.
Free agents don't seem to want to go there for whatever reason. Maybe now that they won the Cup, that'll change.
The weather is not very nice.
It's interesting. I mean, they'd be locking up essentially that crazy core of talent for 10 years, right? Because Parise will get a massive deal. Then you have Richards and Carter on massive long-term deals. You have Quick on a long-term deal. You have Doughty on a long-term deal. I mean, all good players, for the most part, to have on long-term deals. Richards and Carter,
you wouldn't do it again, but you can live with it.
Parise is better than both of them. You know, so it's going to be interesting.
And Richie, I think, you know, it should be noted that, you know, L.A., it's clear that L.A. is making a push when right now Detroit and Pittsburgh are already in there. They've already made their push. It's well known. Detroit, for obvious reasons, you've already touched on them. It's pretty obvious why Parise would want to go there. Detroit's arguably the best-run organization in the league and has been for a really long time. No offense to True North and the Jets, obviously, a very well-run organization, but, I mean, this is their first
year. I've got to tell you, Ezzy, if True North and the Jets are listening to us right now, then we got more serious
then
issues.
We're offended.
Zach Parise, obviously, there's a reason why he'd want to go to Pittsburgh. You know, he's friends with Crosby. J.P. Parise coached Sidney Crosby at Shattuck St. Mary's, which is a prep school in Minnesota. There's a connection there. And obviously Pittsburgh, for obvious reasons, they're an amazing hockey team, and, you know, they're you know, always a cup contender. I still think that it's going to be Pittsburgh or Detroit for Parise. We're going to see. Maybe it's going to be announced today. But I think it's a very short list. But L.A., to me, might be appealing for the simple fact that they now have Richards and Carter, and they're coming off of a Stanley Cup win.
It'd be an interesting dynamic in that room.
In the Los Angeles dressing room? I think it really would be. If you, I mean, if Richards and Carter have not moderated themselves at all since their Philadelphia days, I think it would
well,
be.
Well, not so much that. There's a lot of big stars, so a lot of ego.
Yeah.
And it could go many ways. I think when you have that much, you know, because it's all about lots of times in hockey about the roles, right?
Sure.
So how much talent can you have? You know, they toss out Dustin Brown, and sure, they want to put, you know, they love to have a line with Dustin Brown and Parise and Kopitar, and then Richards and Carter and Willie, you know, or put Williams, keep Williams up top and put Parise on the left side and replace Dustin Penner. Sure. Sure they would. But, you know, what's the chemistry like, and how does it affect the team long term, and how big is the cap hit, and all those factors. So sure, it's worth LA giving it a shot. But
all legitimate concerns. You're absolutely right about that.
I think Detroit's the most appealing option. Detroit.
I want to talk about a different guy. He's unbelievably talented, but he's definitely enigmatic.
Uh-huh.
And that's Alex Semin. Two-part question. Do you think
enigmatic, I think, is a kind term.
Okay, well, do you think
I would say inconsistent and one-dimensional.
That's fine. Those are other terms you could use for him, I suppose. Do you think he stays in the NHL?
I do.
And then who does he go to?
I think Detroit.
You think he goes to Detroit?
Yeah, I do.
On longer than a one-year
deal?
One-
or two-year deal at a reasonable term. So I'd say, like, 2 years, like nine or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think he'd be great with Pavel Datsyuk. They play together at World Championships. He's got the best shot in the NHL, arguably. Semin does. And if you could play in a system for a guy like Mike Babcock, which is far different than playing for Bruce Boudreau or even Dale Hunter, with a guy like Pavel Datsyuk, with other, you know, with a Russian player who he respects, who he's played with before, I think that would be a great fit for him. And so what I'm saying is, you know, you get a guy like that and then Parise, and they can sign a lot of players because Lidstrom's off the books and they had cap room anyways. So I think... You know, I think Detroit's in the driver's seat here.
Yeah.
I do. I think they're going to make a splash, and they've just been consistently good for so long. If you're a player, you have full confidence in Jim Neal and Kenny Holland and Mike Babcock to make the decisions that'll keep this team relevant for the foreseeable future. And why not want to be a part of that?
After Parise and Semin, if you look at the forwards that are free agents, Ryan Smith is off the block. We never really considered him to be on it fully. There is a tremendous drop in talent at that point in time.
There is.
And
you know, it's an interesting guy is Ray Whitney.
Oh, well, he keeps performing.
And he was great last year. And Phoenix, again, if their situation, if you're Ray Whitney, you're not going to wait for Phoenix until July 9th. I don't think you have the allegiance to them that Shane Doan does. So you can help a team right now trying to win. Like, what about Ray Whitney going on a team like Vancouver? You know, help their secondary scoring. He'd be a great guy. He's a veteran guy. He's a Western Canadian boy. They're a contending team that could win that wants to win the Cup. Ray Whitney would be a nice fit there.
What's he going to cost?
He'll, you know, again, it's going to be short term.
Well, sure, because he's 40 years old,
yeah,
so you're not going to do anything longer than that.
Yeah, it'll cost you 3.5 a year, you know, for 2 years or a year for four, something like that.
So he is an interesting guy. That nobody talks about because he keeps performing.
He always performs, and yet he always has to keep signing deals. It's weird. You'd think that, I mean, remember he won the Cup with Carolina. It's an odd thing. I mean, then again, but when you're with...
He was amazing last
year. When
you're
talking about Phoenix...
He was Phoenix's best player last year.
They've had a lot of players in that situation because they're constantly signing veteran guys to 1 or 2 year deals, and then there's always the ownership uncertainty, so guys are always leaving. So.
If you're Ray Whitney, you want. I mean, the question is, does he want to stay in Phoenix? And I mean, if he wants to stay in Phoenix, he could sign for a year. Because honestly, at this point, the appeal to Whitney before, though, Drew, was the
term. He got more than a 1 year deal last time around. This year, he's closing in on that magical 40 number. And
he is 40. It's never.
Oh, is he 40 now?
He's 40 now. He turned 40 on May 8th.
Okay. I didn't have his birth certificate in front of me, but if I did have his birth certificate in front of me, I would have known that. In any event, I think for him now, you want to win a cup before you're done.
Yeah.
And maybe he takes a 2-year deal now instead of a 1-year deal.
Does he go back to Carolina, maybe?
What about Vancouver? Why wouldn't that be a nice fit to play?
That is a good fit.
The right wing on the second line. I mean, what do they think of Mason Raymond? They have David Booth on the left side. Yannick Hansen's better on the third line right wing. And you can play behind Burrows, and you can be the second-line right winger, and you can play big-time power play time on a team with great power play players. Now, I realize he's a little bit slow, and guys like Sedins aren't that fast, but they have other guys who can skate on that team. So I think he'd be a nice fit there.
You know, Richie, we're about 19 minutes away here, and you know, just talking about the secondary free agents, you know, and...
There's two guys I think the Jets should go after, if I can get in here.
Yeah, quickly. Get in there.
Guillaume Lafrenière is a guy who's 25 years old.
Wilder not signing him.
Yeah, has had concussion problems, but he's a veteran guy. He's not a veteran. He's played in the league for a few years. He has talent if he plays. I know he's had concussion problems.
He's got good size.
He has good size. He plays the wing. a third line left wing spot for him, I think would be a nice role for him. He's a guy.
I think he was a first round pick.
Yeah, he's a guy I think the Jets should make a call on. I really do. Yep. I think Peter Mueller is a guy that I think a lot of teams will make a call on, but the Jets too. What if they can get a guy like him who plays right wing on the second line or second line center while they're waiting for a guy like Scheifele or Telegen to develop? I think those are two calls that they should make at forward and see what's out there.
That'll be interesting. A tweet from Ansar Khan. He's a Detroit writer. We've had him on the program before. Wings owner Mike Ilitch and Chris Chelios are both scheduled to visit Ryan Suter's farm in Wisconsin to make their pitch. I think the best part about free agency is that in order to make the pitch, you now have to go to the more and more eclectic areas each year.
I like the way they're doing that. I like that you're coming to Ryan Suter's farm. He's not sitting in the middle of his agent's off. I like that they're going to Ryan Suter's farm. Suter is going to be he's a gem, and he just does everything so well.
He's going to Detroit.
Well,
Pittsburgh cleared all that cap room.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk defense and we'll talk Ryan Suter more in depth.
And who should the Jets should target?
And who the Jets should target. We are 17 minutes away from the start of free agency. We are live at the Winnipeg Free Press and News Cafe. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Yeah.